I'm Tony Hendra.
And I'm Jeff Kreisler.
And this is the final edition Radio Hour.
30 minutes of sizzling satire with teeth.
Last Monday at 7:36 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, ex-Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher died of a stroke. Within minutes, impromptu parties broke out all over the UK, from Glasgow and Liverpool in the north to East London's Brixton in the south. As ordinary working people poured into the streets to celebrate the death of one of the most hated women in modern English history.
Good riddance, Attila the Hun.
Ding dong, the bitch is dead.
Ding dong, the bitch is dead. The witch is bitch, the bitch is bitch.
But what of the Iron Lady herself? Our afterlife investigative unit, headed up by Stone Peck, has that story.
Within seconds of her stroke, Maggie Thatcher's immortal soul was on its way to its inevitable destination, hell. But she'd hardly passed through the fiery gates when something happened that has never happened in the long, long, possibly infinite history of the nine circles of fire, brimstone, and torment. A truly wicked soul was rejected. A spokesman for Satan said the Dark Lord of the Underworld had no comment, but his Director of Infernal Affairs, Beelzebub, was on the scene. Beelzebub, just what caused this extraordinary decision?
Stone, we were really, really excited to be getting Mrs. Thatcher. I mean, here was a world-renowned monster who, in her own country, had robbed tens of millions of the poor blind, at the same time making the rich hundreds of percent richer than they ever dreamed of being. All while saying it was the rich she was really fighting. Brilliant. Then spreading these marvelously, wonderfully vile and cruel policies to Europe, to Japan, to Asia, to Latin America, and to the U.S., through her boyfriend Reagan and his minions. So now hundreds of millions of poor people all over the planet were being robbed blind by tiny ruling classes of pornographically wealthy people. What not to love? She made Messalina and Madame Mao look like little girls who told a fib. We couldn't wait for Maggie, a global celebrity of rapacious greed and vicious classism, a bona fide star of evil.
So what happened?
Well, she came through our gates of fire with that voice blaring away.
Ready to move beyond the present position to the creation of a European monetary fund.
Speechifying a mile a minute. She's going to shake this place up. There's too many demons per soul. Don't forget, these are ordinary hard-flogging and hard-spearing demons. She's gonna fire two out of every three demons. What? How can you fire someone in hell? Now she's gonna privatize all nine circles, sell them to separate consortiums so they'll run at a profit? Release all the lawyers in the eighth circle to work out the details. What? Release all those lawyers chained up to their necks in molten dog shit? Where's the fun in that? We'd go crazy down here without them to taunt.
So who made the decision to fire her?
Our eternally damned advisory board. Saddam, Mother Teresa, Sweeney Todd, Eva Braun, Pol Pot, Ronald Reagan recommended she be cast forth from hell for all eternity. Like Ronnie said.
Well, if she stays, abandon hope are we who have entered here.
So what becomes of Mrs. Thatcher now? Earth doesn't want her back.
Simple. She's condemned to wander the dark and trackless wastes of space for all eternity. Utterly alone. Ignored. Unloved. Unheard. Irrelevant and despised. Till time is no more. And then some.
Monetary policy at all. It was really about a backdoor to a federal Europe. A federal Europe taking many, many democratic powers away from democratic electors.
So there we have it. Our exclusive afterlife story. Thatcher dies, goes to hell, hell spits her right back out.
Do you like bacon?
Sure, sometimes.
Then come on and get your big, beefy bacon burger at Burger Busters. You get bacon, cheese, more bacon, a big, beefy burger containing bacon, cheese again, bacon again, and two big bacon buns. Then you wash it down with bacon cola and a side of fried cheese with bacon.
Do you have anything vegetarian?
Sure, we have Thai salad with papaya and lime juice and bacon. It comes with a side of bacon orange juice and a bacon blueberry smoothie and bacon ice cubes and bacon Canadian bacon.
What if I don't want bacon?
Too bad! By order of the U.S. Congress, all food must now contain bacon!
What?
That's right! They couldn't pass filibuster reform, but they passed this!
This is a nightmare!
So come on down to Burger Busters for your federally mandated diet of bacon! Eat the goddamn bacon!
Welcome to Emerging Vocations, where we look at changes in today's job market. My guest this morning is one of the many people who telecommutes, who works entirely out of his home. He is what is called an aggregator and gathers links and content for various web pages. Mr. Bob Trilling, welcome.
Hi. Does my voice sound weird? I'm not used to talking. Talking.
So, it must be really convenient to work right out of your home. What sort of advantages are there with telecommuting?
There's no traffic.
Uh-huh.
No office politics. I was never good at that.
Sure.
Bathing is optional.
Right.
Boy, it's bright in here.
And how did you first start telecommuting?
Well, I had another job. I can't even remember it anymore. I worked at a newspaper. I was a layout person.
And then you became part of the new economy. So tell us what you do. Walk us through your day.
I get up at noon or midnight. Day and night are kind of the same. Then I get online and look for news stories about the biological sciences. Then I enter them onto a website about the biological sciences. Then I play online games for a while. Then a week goes by.
Boy, waking up late and staying in my underwear all day? That's the job of my dreams.
In my dreams, I'm always walking down a long road and I can't find anyone.
One more thing. What would you say is the best thing about working at home by yourself?
Well, it gives you a lot of time to think about what led up to this.
I never thought of it that way. Mr. Bob Trilling, thanks for talking to us.
Was this real?
It's time for another story from the final edition's Big Book of Morally Improving Virtues. Tonight, The Tortoise and the Hare, an ancient and beloved tale which teaches us little, except possibly the value of organized sports. One day, long ago, a hare, which people confuse with rabbits but are actually related to the deer family, met a tortoise.
Gee, you're slow. So slow,
said the hare.
Old creepy, that's what you are. I'd like to see you in the 1,000 meters. What a joke,
chattered the hare, for hares tend to be harebrained and talk too much. Eventually, the tortoise got a word in edgewise.
Old creepy, huh? Let's race. We'll see who wins, hare face.
You're on. Who'll be the starter?
How about...
Yeah, who?
The fox.
Okay,
said the hare, and fetched the fox. The fox was familiar with animal races, and suggested they use the shoulder of a deserted stretch of Old County Road 31.
That way it's going to be easier in Old Torty, see?
Okay. Let's go.
Cool your jets, kiddo. Okay, Torty, up to the starting line. Come on, Torty, let me give you a lift.
Don't touch me.
Hey, no sweat. Slow but sure. All righty, both at the line. Ready, set, go!
The hare shot ahead and was around the curve and out of sight in seconds. The fox, knowing that the hare would probably take a nap somewhere along the course, and that the slow but steady tortoise was most likely to win, thus teaching us the virtues of steadiness and reliability, set off in a leisurely manner up the road. Imagine his surprise when he rounded the second curve, and there was the hare, toweling off at the finish line. Up scurried his buddy, Hank the Hedgehog, with a stopwatch.
Amazing time. 1:44.8. Could be a record for this neck of the woods. Perhaps even the whole county.
Wow,
said the fox, looking admiringly at the hare.
We're going to have to work a little with you. Perhaps get you into the All-State Small Mammal Trials.
Great, 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 great.
Know something? You're very attractive,
said the fox.
Well, thanks, big fella,
said the hare, smiling in a pretty inviting way.
Women athletes,
said the fox, smiling back.
Doesn't matter what sport, when you guys get all sweated up, man, it drives me crazy.
So they found an abandoned badger set just off the highway and went at it. Talk about the beast with two backs. They must have done it at least a dozen times, every which way from Sunday. Neither of them had ever had intra-species sex that fabulous with anyone. And the tortoise? Well, the tortoise took the rest of the day to get about 40 meters down the course, and finally, utterly exhausted, fell asleep on the shoulder of the highway. The fox found the little tortoise shell there the next morning. From it came quiet little tortoise tears.
Oh, come on, honey.
Did I forget to say the tortoise was a girl, too?
You did great. For a tortoise. Especially a girl tortoise.
Whispered the fox gently, for he was a soft-hearted fellow. To cheer her up, he took her to the abandoned badger set, and did his best to show her a good time. Which didn't work out so well, because tortoises are reptiles and don't really have vaginas. So instead...
Know what I'm gonna do, torty baby?
Said the fox.
Organize special games. Just for you. To empower all tortoises.
The tortoise cheered up right away. Everyone in the forest pitched in, and the Speed Challenged Olympics were held the very next day. All the events were things that empowered tortoises, like synchronized paddling and shell shushing and...
Contestants, please, for the next event, imitating a rock.
The whole thing was a stunning success, and everyone lived happily ever after. Until the fox went off his meds and set the forest on fire. Not a single creature, including the fans at the Speed Challenged Olympics, survived. So actually, the moral of this story is, anthropomorphizing animals is a mug's game. Animals are animals. They don't exist in a moral universe. Okay? The end.
This Week in Canada, eh? I'm your guest host, Harry Lank. Tonight on our all-Canadian panel, you know, we don't actually have any Canadians in it. What's that all about? Please welcome singer-songwriter Elvis Costello, former Wings frontman Paul McCartney, comedian Louis C.K., and recently deceased flaming Tory nightmare Margaret Thatcher. Good day, eh?
Good day.
Hello.
Hello.
Anything happen in Canada this week? Yes. Elvis Costello.
Well, Argo came out in Blu-ray. That was good.
Yes,
right?
Oh, yes.
That
was good.
Yeah, that was good.
Yes,
that was good.
Well, yeah, Argo's still a big thing for Canada, eh? But, you know, anything else? Sports, weather, beer. Yes, Sir Paul McCartney.
Oh, Mrs. Thatcher.
Oh, yes. That's good.
See, that was good. That happened.
Wait. What about Mrs. Thatcher? Elvis Costello.
Oh, she passed away.
She was like a mum to me. She knighted me in 1997.
My dear deluded working class zero, you were knighted by Queen Elizabeth II.
Well, she's like a mum to me too, isn't she?
All right, please keep your cheekiness Canadian and not Liverpudlian, eh?
Can I say something, please?
Yes, Louis C.K., what do you have to say about Canada?
Well, I don't know about Canada,
But my kid can't fucking play hide and seek. She fucking sucks at it. I mean, fucking learn the rules, okay?
Mr. Costello, what was that dreary lyric you wrote about me in 1989?
When England was the whore of the world, Margaret was a madam.
I created today's banking crisis, today's housing crisis, and today's benefits crisis, and the best you can come up with is a prostitution metaphor?
Okay, if I read this metaphor correctly, if England was the whore of the world, then Canada must have been one of her clients.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah,
Canada, right? Canada went whoring in England.
Yeah, Canadian jobs, yeah,
sure. Yeah. So come back next week and find out what that show is all about.
I mean, all my kid has to do is fucking hide, right? Hide. Well, I count to 10. Is that so fucking hard? I mean, do I have to draw a fucking map?
Every time I feel like this aside, there's one thing I want to know. What's so funny about this love and understand?
You're listening to the Final Edition Radio Hour.
I'm Stone White.
And I'm Chirpy News Chick at Ground Zero in Austin, Texas. Glorious leader Kim Sung-un has recently announced his nuclear intentions on the capital city of the Republic of Texas.
Glorious leader Rick Perry will protect us, Chirpy.
Yeah, glorious leader Rick Perry is visiting his money in Panama this week.
Well, there's never been a nuclear attack on a Tuesday. I'm sure we'll be fine.
And that's the news from Ground Zero in Austin, Texas.
That's a wrap.
Can you believe that moron wants to nuke Austin? It's the commie capital of the South.
Austin's North Korea with coffee shops.
And food. Austin has food.
And Mexicans. Do they have Mexicans in North Korea?
No, they have North Koreans in North Korea.
Who does all the work?
They have North Koreans.
That's barbaric. They need some Mexicans.
And hippie guitar players.
Austin has vaporizers. They could smoke North Korea.
Austin has lesbians.
That look like Mao Zedong.
It's Kim Sung-un.
Who?
No, who's in China? Kim Sung-un is in North Korea.
I thought it was Kim Sung-il.
Il is dead.
Who's dead?
Who's in China?
I thought he was dead.
Whose father is ill?
How is ill dead?
How is in Singapore?
Who's in Singapore?
No! Who is in China? How is Singapore?
I've never been there.
And Un's father is dead.
I thought you said he was ill.
He's dead.
Who's dead?
Who is in China?
I don't know who's in China.
I just told
who's
you.
Who's in China?
That's right.
Who?
Who?
Who? Ah! Who's in China?
That's right. Who?
I don't know. I don't know.
I just told you! Who?
What's that sound? Oh, my God.
Incoming!
Who would do this to our beautiful wickedness?
Who's in China?
I don't know, but we're on first. Make love to me, Chirpy.
That's so sweet of you.
You is in Taiwan.
I love it when you speak ghetto.
The Final Edition Radio Hour now takes you to the White House, where President Barack Obama has called a special news conference regarding the issue of the domestic use of drones.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, I called this conference today in order to clear up the recent reports that I have the authority to use drones in a domestic capacity. I know that many of you are thinking that I, the President of the United States, would never use drones to attack his own people, especially in the United States. Well, let me assure you, it's true. The president has got his hand on the joystick of drones, and Barack Obama is going to do some droning. Questions?
Mr. President, you can't be serious.
Oh, I am serious. I have control of the drones now, and rest assured, droning is going to happen.
Mr. President.
Surely, sir, you don't mean that you are literally in control of the drone?
Oh, yes, I do. Listen, people, as you know, all throughout my first term, Republicans were a pain in the ass regarding passing any damn thing. So what did I do? Spent hours playing Call of Duty. I have become a master of double analog. And what is controlled by double analog? That's right, the dudes in Call of Duty and drones. I'm droning, ladies and gentlemen, and daddy-like.
So, sir, who gets droned?
Oh, it's simple. Domestic terrorists, select hate groups, and the Republicans.
Sir, you can't just go after the opposing party because they didn't agree with your policies and voted them down.
I'm in charge of the drones now. Yes, I can. Folks are gonna get droned.
This is pretty scary, sir.
People, is it any scarier than the Patriot Act? Under the Patriot Act, I can come into your home, call you a terrorist, and start waterboarding you immediately. I would even let Vice President Biden hold you down. That's his thing.
But, Mr. President, don't you think your personal control of an unmanned killing machine is a tad bit excessive?
That's a good question. You know, you just saved yourself from a droning. But to answer, is it excessive? I have control over SEAL Team 6. Is that excessive? I could have those guys come over to your house tonight and pretend you're Osama bin dead.
I'm scared.
Yes, Mr. President, we're all scared.
Good. That's how I like it. So watch it, America. Don't piss me off. If you are going to attack our way of life and suppress freedom, you're going to get droned. If you like to deal drugs, look out. Here comes a drone. If you're a talking head on Fox News, oh, watch it. Here comes a droning. If you hate national health care, droned. But you will still be covered. So, silver lining.
I knew it.
Aunt Coulter, what are you doing here?
Nobody believed me. I told you all that he was a tyrant who wants to destroy the American people, and you all laughed. You said I was crazy. And now he's going to drone the country, except for the bad part. Gays, liberals, and New York City.
Secret Service, take Aunt Coulter outside. I'm going to give her a droning.
This has been a special news conference by the President of the United States on his insane droning. Wow. Whoever would have thought this president would be worse than George W.
And now, Act Two of the award-winning play, Billy Elliot.
Father, I want to dance.
But we're British coal miners, son. Fighting tyranny. Dancing is not a tough guy thing to do. We must be strong.
But Papa...
I said no! No dancing!
Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher is dead! The strike is off. The unions survive. We can live. Maggie Thatcher is dead.
The Prime Minister is dead?
She is no more.
Everybody dance now!
This episode of the Final Edition Radio Hour was performed by Darby Worley, Antu Chell, Barry Lank, Kevin Janis, Jen Dodd, Rob Gordon, Jeff Chrysler, and Tony Hendra. It was written by Barry Lank, John Marshall, Rob Gordon, Jeff Chrysler, and Tony Hendra. Special thanks to Scooter of KPFT and Houston for Who Is Not Austin. And here comes the pitch. Be sure to visit thefinaledition.com often, daily, regularly, frequently, oft times, over and over, recurrently, a number of times, time after time, for more sizzling satire with teeth. The Final Edition Radio Hour was produced by Jeff Chrysler and Tony Hendra and edited and engineered by Greg Russ. The Final Edition Radio Hour is a production of The Final Edition, LLC, copyright 2013.